Paul Robertson and his brothers were all working on a high-rise building being built in downtown Milwaukee. They're about 40 stories up, sitting on a steel beam, and they apparently at lunch break, they always sit down and have lunch together up there overlooking the lake and everything, and Tom had opened up his lunch pail, and there was a bologna sandwich, and he said, "You know what? I'm sick and tired of bologna sandwiches. If I get one tomorrow, I'm jumping to my death." And Ron looked at him like he was foolish and opened up his lunch bag, and there was a burrito in there. And he goes, "You know, come to think of it, I'm sick and tired of burritos. If I get a burrito tomorrow, I'm jumping with you, bro." And Paul thought they were both crazy. He opened up his lunch pail, and there was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And sure enough, he, like his brother, said, "You know what? Come to think of it, guys, I get this all the time, too. If I get tomorrow, I'm jumping with you." And so in the dream, they opened up their lunch pails the next day, and in Tom's bag, there was a what? And he jumped. Ron had a burrito, and he jumped. And Paul, with fear and trembling, looked at the two lunches sitting there, looked down at his brothers, opens up his bag, and there was a, and he jumped. A couple of days later, in the funeral home, all the wives were crying. There's Gene and Sandy, and you could hear them saying things like, "If I had just known, if they had just told me," which is why communication is good for you, see? You got to be able to share those things. And they were just kind of sobbing and grieving the loss. But Jerry was sitting over in a chair over here, kind of like this. No emotion, just kind of blank. And she felt eyes staring at her, which made her mad. And then she finally spoke and she says, "What are y'all looking at me for? Paul fixes his own lunch." What does it have to do with anything? I don't know. All right. There, you're about to get a card, one per family, of something we'll be using a little bit later in our message today. So Tom will be handing out a vision. Actually, I had this in my head when I was at the Robertson's house earlier this year, and it kind of summarizes all that I think about when it comes to relationships. And so you'll hear that lecture before the day's out, but this is a visual of kind of how I frame my life and how I live my life, okay? But for this right now, what I want to do is show you something that kind of relates back to yesterday and some conversations I've had. Let's say this circle represents all the knowledge that exists in the world. So if this circle represents all the knowledge that exists in the world, how much knowledge do you think you possess? A little dot. So I'm going to make the dot big enough so you can see it, all right? But mine would be like that and even smaller, all right? So can we honestly, logically, and rationally admit, based on all the knowledge that exists in the world, you don't know much, do you? But have you ever noticed when you're in an argument with someone, your brain acts like it knows everything, doesn't it? Be aware of that. Your brain acts like it knows everything in conflict, but you really don't know much based on all the knowledge that exists in the world. So we're going to take all the knowledge that exists in the world, and we're going to divide it into some categories. The first category is a category of things that you know, and then there's a category of the things that you don't know. Now, your brain has, when it comes to what you know and what you don't know, your brain knows what it knows, and it knows what it doesn't know. Got it? So your brain knows what it knows, and it knows what it doesn't know. And what you know, what you know you don't know, is the dot and isn't much. You see how it works? Now, what is something you know that you know? Hopefully you know that you know you're a male. Hopefully you know that you know you're a female. Hopefully you know that you know that what your age is. Hopefully you know that you know if you're married or not. Got it? There's a realm of knowledge of things that you know that you know. Maybe hopefully you know that you know that 2 + 2 = 4. All right. Now, there's a realm of knowledge of things that you know that you don't know. What's something you know you don't know? Anybody? The theory of relativity. She knows she doesn't know the theory of relativity. I know that I don't know quantum physics. I know that I know that I don't want to know quantum physics. You see how it works? Now, your brain can only work from one area. It only operates from the realm of what it knows. It knows what it knows, and it knows what it doesn't know, and that's the dot, and it isn't much. Can we all agree to that rationally, logically? Got it? Now, here's how it works practically. Let's say Luell and I are arguing about something, and you can only argue from what you... That's the only thing you can argue from. And so as we're arguing back and forth from what I know, she can argue from what she knows, but in the midst of the argument, Luella says something, get this, Luella says something which is something that I didn't know. that I didn't know. And this is the area outside of the dot. That massive area outside the dot is the area that I didn't know I didn't know. So if we're both arguing for what we know, what I know that I know. She says something that I didn't know that I didn't know. You ever been there before? And when she said the thing that I didn't know I didn't know, it conflicted with what I knew that I knew. You ever been there before? And when she said the thing that I didn't know that I didn't know, and it conflicted with what I knew that I knew, in that moment, I also knew that I was wrong. You ever been there before? What do most people do when they learn something they didn't know, they thought they knew that they knew, and they found out they were wrong? They get mad, they get defensive. Why? Here's the reason why. It's because you're not teachable. I raised my kids to understand one thing. Mature people are teachable. Immature people are not. Immature people live as if their dot is all there is to know. Or the psalmist puts it this way, wise men accept rebuke. Why do wise men accept rebuke? Because wise men know that they know, there's a lot of things they don't know that they don't know. And because they know they know, there's a lot of things they don't know they don't know, they stay teachable. But the way you live is if you know it all, one of the two things, I told my kids this, if you live, if the day you operate as if you're right and everybody else is wrong, got it? That what you know is everything there is to know, one of two things happened in that moment. You became God, or you became a fool, and I don't think you're God. So don't prove to people that you're a fool, and you won't if you stay what? So why is it that people don't change their lives? Why is it that untrustworthy people don't care that they're untrustworthy? It's because they want to stay in their little dot. It is act as if what they know is all there is to know. You can do that, but everybody else knows that you're a fool. You just don't know that you're a fool because you're not. By the way, whenever you learn something you didn't know that conflicted, you know that you know, in that moment, you have to make a decision. Here's how it works. Your name is?
Schmitty.
Can I pick on you for a minute? Okay, I don't know Schmitty, so this isn't really about him. Just using him as an example. Let's say I say to Schmitty, hey, Schmitty, did you know you have an anger problem? He goes, I don't have an anger problem, because he knows what he knows, right? And I go, no, okay. Well, how do you know you don't have an anger problem? He goes, because I know. Because he knows what he knows. I said, no, I get you. I get that. I asked, how do you know that you don't have an anger problem? He goes, because I know. No, I get that. I asked, how do you know, Schmitty, you don't have an anger problem? He goes, because I know, Rick. Did you know that you do this, you do this, and you do this? Things he doesn't know that he doesn't know. He goes, no, I didn't realize I do those things. I said, you do. And these things suggest that you have an anger problem. I don't have an anger problem! Actually, Schmitty, what you don't know is you do have an anger problem. The problem is you're not willing to consider the possibility that what you think you know is really something you don't know. Maybe you do have an addiction problem. Maybe you do are controlling. Maybe you are unloving. You see, I've learned something in my journey of growing. Luella saw things in me that I didn't know about me. Did you get that? There were things about me that I didn't know that I didn't know about me that she knew because she saw them. She had to experience them. This is where I've learned in my own journey, my phrase, the way you think you come across is not the way you do come across. The way you think you're being experienced is not the way you are being experienced. And in the end, it's not what you think you are, it is how you are. And people make those decisions based on that, not how you think you are. You get that? You get that? Stay teachable. Stay teachable. I had a guy, he runs a $2 billion division of a $19 billion healthcare company. He travels around the world. He's in my office. He and his wife are trying to save their marriage. It was the second marriage for him. First marriage for her. He was committing adultery on her. And 50 minutes, he's kind of telling me I'm right, or he's right and I'm wrong. Well, I don't argue with people. You don't argue with fools. And so I don't. So I went through all this with him. And he goes, so what are you suggesting? I'm not suggesting anything. I'm just suggesting you're not teachable. He goes, well, that's clear. And I said, of course it is. I'm very clear. He goes, so you're thinking that you know more than me? Yes, sir. That's what I'm suggesting. He goes, wasn't that arrogant? I said, no, sir. That's the truth. He goes, isn't that arrogant? No, sir. I said, let me give you an example. I said, that is your realm of knowledge of your business. That's my realm of knowledge of your business, right? And he said, yes. Now, if I took my realm of knowledge of your business and I started to do your job, what would I look like? And I won't say the word. I said, yeah, you're right, kind of a fool. I said, here's the problem. This is my realm of knowledge of my world. this is your realm of knowledge of my world. I'm not smarter than you. I operate in different realm of knowledge. I see things that you don't see. But you're not open to my feedback. If you're not open to my feedback, I said, there's a door. You can leave now. You don't need someone like me. If you want to get where you need to be, you better be what? Even David in Psalm 139 says something near the end of Psalm 139. He says to the Lord, search me and know my hidden parts. Even David acknowledged there are parts of him that he didn't know that he didn't know. And he asked the Lord to show him the parts of himself that he didn't know that he didn't know. Why? Because when I learned the things that I didn't know about myself, I can fix them. See, if I realize that, I do have an addiction problem. Gosh, I have an anger problem. Gosh, I am unloving. And I'm willing to accept, even though they're painful, the things that I didn't know about me that are painful, if I'm willing to at least accept them and bring them into my realm of knowledge, I can fix them. Because you can't fix something that's not in your realm of what? Now, if something enters into your realm of knowledge and you don't want to deal with it or deny it, that's what denial is. Denial is not wanting to deal with the truth. Make sense? So always stay what? Teachable. Okay. With that, we're going to cover two more pillars today. All right. We're covering the eight pillars of trust. We've already gone through clarity, compassion, character, and competency. Today, we're going to quickly cover commitment and connection. Commitment and connection. Would you trust someone who's not committed to you? Would you? No. Would you trust your spouse if they weren't committed to the marriage or to you? Of course not. You don't trust people where there's a lack of commitment. All right? And by the way, let me say something real quickly here. Just because you stick around, i.e. in the marriage, doesn't mean you're committed to the marriage. Did you get that? Just because you stick around in the marriage doesn't mean you're committed to the marriage. Those are very different conversations. All right? I know people who have lived separate for 30 years in two different homes. Two different bedrooms in that same home. They were committed to the marriage, though there was not a marriage. You got it? Those are very different conversations, and that is not what Christ expected when he talks about godly marriage. That's what he wants love to flow, all right? So let's talk about the pillar of commitment. Numbers 30, verse 2 says it this way. If a man vows a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word, commitment. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. Be careful of the things you say and commit yourself to. You see, because if you say commit yourself to something, then people won't hold you to it, right? True in business, right? Tell your boss going to do something, they're going to what? Hold you to it, because there's a commitment expected there. Psalm 37:5 says this way, commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will act. 1 Kings 8:61 says it this way, let your heart therefore be wholly true to the Lord your God, walking in his statutes and keeping his commandments. That's commitment. Luke 9:62, Jesus said to him, no one who puts his hand to the bow looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. Colossians 3:23 says it this way, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. And Psalm 31:5, into your hand I commit my spirit. You have redeemed me, O Lord, faithful God. And probably the greatest three words of Jesus that shows his commitment to his dad were these three words. It is finished. It is finished. I have committed myself to what you want to do. I have done it. Wow. Wow. And so what are some ways that you can show commitment? Now, here's some if you're taking notes. Number one, own up to your choices. We all make choices. Own up to your choices. If you make a choice to do something, follow through. And by the way, if you make a choice to do something and it causes pain, own up to that too. You get it? If you've done something that hurt people, own up to it. Own up to the things that you say you're going to own up to. Because here's one thing we know about great leaders. Great leaders take responsibility for their choices. Now, I'm an American history nut, and I love to study the Civil War. But this, General Lee, if you ever studied a man's life, he was a phenomenal tactician, but he was a phenomenal leader and a phenomenal man. And you guys whooped us Rebs at Gettysburg, as you well know. He sent about 9,000 men across a mile of open ground. Anybody know what that was on the third day of the battle? What was that called? Biggest charge, the worst decision the man ever made. By this time of the war, Lee had been able to defeat the Union Army three times outnumbered. He'd be three times outnumbered, and he'd whoop them. Did it at Chancellorsville, did it at Fredericksburg. By this point in time, he had a lot of confidence in his men and in his ability. And so on the third day of the battle, he sends 9,000 men across a mile of open ground to an entrenched Union line with a lot of cannons. If you know the story, it was a massacre. It was a massacre. Stupid decision. Longstreet was ordered to basically lead that whole charge. Longstreet put it off because he knew it wasn't going to work. And he couldn't get General Lee to not do it. But he knew it wouldn't work because Longstreet was much more in tune with the future. They have repeating rifles. They got this. They got no one can do this the way in these old tactics. It wouldn't work. And Longstreet waited a few hours. Guess who took the blame for the whole failure? General Lee did. He took the blame for the failure. He told his men, it's all my fault. I made this decision. It cost us, but I took the blame. He took the blame. You see this in great leaders throughout world history. Number one, own up to your choices. Number two, do more than is expected of you. If someone wants a coat, wants you to walk a mile, what did Jesus say? Go an additional mile. Do more than is expected of you. Do more than is expected. If you only do what the expectations are, what's the message you send people? You'll do just enough to get by so that you're okay. Got it? Does that show commitment? No, it shows responsibility. But commitment, somehow, for whatever reason, I think it's because it's internal, it goes the additional distance, doesn't it? That's why I call Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is a committed company because they always go the extra mile. Now, our ministry was a part of the Chick-fil-A Healthy Marriage Initiative for about 10 years before they changed it over to a fatherhood initiative. And so I got very much involved with Chick-fil-A at the corporate level. And I remember I was in a meeting with Truett once, and he was talking to his leaders. And he said, I heard that one of our stores had a single mom drive up with an outdated free chicken coupon, and we denied them that free chicken coupon. That free chicken, because the coupon was outdated. He said, let me tell you something. You always accept an outdated coupon. We will do more than it's expected. We will exceed their expectations. And he goes, enough said about that. Let's move on. You get it? Do more than what? Is expected. Third is commitment requires courage. Sometimes commitment requires courage. And here's the other thing I learned about commitment. Commitment, sometimes, people are committed to things they want no money for. People are committed to things they want no money for. There are some people right now marching in the streets, right? Because they're committed to a cause, are they not? They're committed to a cause. They're not getting money for it. You're committed to certain things, maybe, you know, because you believe in it. And the greatest picture that I can think of from the 1900s that is the greatest picture of commitment and courage, you younger people won't know this, but you older ones will, is this picture right here. Hang on. Those are the three things. That one right there. For those who don't know, many years ago, there was an uprising in China. Young people to rise up and was forcing a democracy. And they took over Tiananmen Square. And it was national news. Everybody's watching. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? And the Chinese government finally shut down all media, kicked all foreign media out, got them away, and they sent in the military. And this one guy stood in front of a tank and wouldn't move. That guy wouldn't move. He got no money for that. But that was a man with courage, was committed to a cause. Let me ask you a question. Do you have that kind of commitment for your family? Do you have that kind of commitment for your wife, sir? Do you have that kind of commitment for your husband? Do Do you have that kind of commitment for your faith? Because I've learned commitment takes what? It takes courage. And some people committed things they get no money for. I am committed to seeing marriages strong and healthy, whether I make money or not. It's who I am. When I first left First Baptist Jacksonville, I had no money, no income. And I was lamenting one day, Lord, I ain't got no money, no supporters. And he said, do something with nothing, Rick. I said, excuse me? He said, do something with nothing. I went, wait a minute, I do have some things. So I got some friends of mine, and I had some pastor friends of mine. And I got them all together and said, here's what I want to do. I want to start citywide worship services for marriage. They go, what? Yeah. Can I borrow your church? Yeah, I got no money. Fine. Okay. And then I got my friends together, and we started to advertise the best way we knew how. And we started bringing people in, and I would do a whole worship service on a Saturday night. It was focused strictly on marriage. And at the end, we had an altar call, but the altar call was to come down and get interceding prayer work over your marriage. And I just started doing those things. That's all I did. Because I could do something with what? Because I was committed to this. There was a about 10, 15 years back in the late 90s into the 2000s, the smart marriage movement. And the government started handing out grant money to save marriages because the TANF dollars could allow it. The welfare dollars allowed it. So all these grants were being put out for people to come to get grant money from the federal government to strengthen marriages. All that grant money has gone away under this administration. Guess where all those organizations are that went after grant money to save marriages? They're gone. Guess who's still standing? People like me. You want to know why? We don't chase grant money. We fight for marriages and families regardless, because that's who we are. What do you fight for? What are you committed to? Maybe your commitment's to yourself. And if it is, that's okay. But you understand, when your commitment's to yourself, people aren't going to trust you because they know you're committed to yourself. And you don't trust people that are not committed, right? You don't trust people where there's not a commitment to a relationship. All right. Now, next is the pillar of connection. The pillar of connection. You have this here, all right? Let me kind of give you some passages I'm thinking. Every interaction, listen to this phrase here. Every interaction, ignore that up there right now, okay? Just ignore that. Every interaction that you make with people increases or decreases interaction. Whether you like it or not, every interaction you make with people either increases trust or decreases trust. All right, Maya Angelou said this, I have learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And that's true in the sales world, right? If you treat people and make them feel like they're stupid or incompetent or whatever, they're not buying your product. Why? They don't trust you. They don't trust you. At its core, trust is really about relationships. Here's a story. I've been a long time renter of Enterprise, going back to the 80s. And when I moved back to Jacksonville in 96, I was renting from a particular store near my house. I have seen a whole bunch of managers come and go through that store. Okay, they always get promoted out. Heather was there in 2004. All right, haven't seen Heather in a long time. There were a bunch of others that I've seen and built relationships with. Well, about was it Memorial Day? It's past Memorial Day. I rented a car from downtown, the airport. All right, and so I took the car back to the airport, and as I did, this girl comes up and she says, Dr. Marks, so good to see you. I went, Kristen. It was one of those managers that I saw about 3 years ago that was there. You know, the first thing she asked me was, is your daughter still in Amman, Jordan? I went, you remember my daughter was in Jordan? She says, oh, yes. And didn't you have a son who's about to go to Florida State? Yes. Do you think I'll go trust that woman? 2 months later, actually about 3 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, Luell and I finally decided we had to get a new car, and guess where I went to buy my new vehicle? Enterprise. We don't buy new cars. We buy newer, older cars. And so we went to Enterprise car sales. Never done it before. We thought, let's try it out. Let's see what happens. And we found the right one, and I'm standing there waiting to say, you know, I'm in the waiting room, and all of a sudden, this woman comes to me. She says, Dr. Marks. So good to see you. And Heather, that was from 2004. She came up and gave me a hug. And she started asking me questions about my life and my ministry. I go, Heather, I haven't seen you since 2005. You remember all that? She said, yes. As a matter of fact, it turns out we have a lot of Facebook friends together. You know my family members. And I said, I never knew that. Boy, is that a company you'd want to invest in? When they remember your name, they remember who you are, and they remember things about you. Those are pretty good managers, are they not? Those are companies you want to invest in, and those are companies you'll tend to what? Trust, you see. You tend to trust them. And if there's something always went wrong, Enterprise always made it right. And no, this is not an endorsement of Enterprise. Okay? So if you're all listening, Hertz or Budget, this is not about them. All right? My point is, relationships require connection, and you trust the relationships that you're connected to. You don't trust relationships you're not connected to. If there is a decrease or a breakdown in the connection of your marriage, you're not going to trust the person who's not connected to you, are you? If you don't have a connection to your dad or your mom, you're not going to trust them. Do I love my dad? Yes, he's been dead for 32 years. Did I trust my dad with my heart? The answer is no. Did I trust my heart with my stepmother? The answer is no. They had not earned the right to trust because there was a breakdown in our connection based on the way they always treated us. You got it? So you always go trust your heart somewhere else. You trust your heart around people who are safe. You don't trust your heart around people who send you the message, I don't care how you think and I don't care how you feel. And when trust creeps in, when distrust creeps in, you got a problem. So then I made a decision last night. I know it sounds weird, but I do. Sometimes I pray and think, and last night I was studying my lecture and wrestling with something, and I said, nah, I'm going to do this instead. So you didn't get my Ritz-Carlton conversation. Sorry. But I'll tell you this. If you take the core values of the Ritz-Carlton, they match a great marriage. They do. The Ritz-Carlton values that they live by match a great marriage. So I was going to tell you about a Ritz-Carlton marriage, but I thought I would tell you this, because some of you won't come to the marriage seminar, and I want to give you a gift. This is the one lecture most people remember me for. I call this the power of us. Whenever I go to a church for the first time, this is the message I always preach. Not because it's just easy, because it's powerful. In its simplicity, it's very powerful. If you do what I'm about to tell you, I promise you, you have a strong, healthy, vibrant marriage and family. If you don't do what I'm about to tell you, don't complain about what path you get. You with me? I learned this a long time ago by accident. When I was a professor at Regent University many years ago, I was studying, you know, marriage and family. It's what I do for a living. And I was reading different people's definition of this idea of one flesh. Like, what is a one flesh marriage? And people have these different definitions trying to define one flesh. But for me, the definitions of one flesh that are out there don't seem to be sufficient. And then I came to realization, both Paul and Jesus admit that the idea of one flesh is a mystery, right? So if it's actually a mystery, how do you clearly and articulately define something that is on some level mysterious, right? So not knowing then that I was about to change my life, I asked the Lord a different question, which took me on a whole different way of living. I said, all right then, Lord, if I really can't understand what a one flesh marriage is, how would I know it if I had it? How would I know if I had a one-flesh marriage? And this is that understanding. The most important part of your marriage. Oh, by the way, quickly, I'm about to ask you a question, and don't get mad at me. Can we intellectually and honestly admit that you do not have to be a Christian to have a great marriage? Can we be honest about that? Anybody can have a good marriage, Christian or not. Now, what it takes to have a great marriage is biblical, but anybody can do it, Christian or not. I know I have a Buddhist couple who are friends of mine in Florida and some Muslim couples. We have a Muslim girl that lives with us. Her name's Yusra. She's like a daughter to us. We know people in her family background. Phenomenal marriages. Great people. Great Americans. And I know Christian people who have terrible marriages. They're saved, but they're immature. These people are mature and love well. These people are immature and don't love well. You got it? Now, if you do this one thing I'm going to tell you about today, I promise you, it'll change your life. It'd be like going from vanilla ice cream to mint chocolate chip, okay? Now, The most important part of the marriage then is the third part of the marriage. The third part wins, you both win. Third part loses, you both lose. And I am not talking about God. So we're going to take him out of the equation for a minute and talk about what does it take of a good marriage regardless of your faith background. So what is the third part of the marriage I'm talking about? It's the idea of one flesh, or what I call us. It's us. Us is a more contemporary word for the idea of one flesh. You see, I've come to realize when us wins, you both win. When us loses, you both lose. It takes two to make an us and only one of you to kill it. I can give to us and Luell not, and there will not be an us. Luell can give to us and I not. There will not be an us. And you always know when us is in the house, it's really simple because when us is in the house, you feel its presence. Because when us is in the house, you can feel the love, you can feel the warmth, you can feel the connection, you can feel the tenderness. So I tell couples, you want three people in your bedroom every night, you, her, and us. Meanwhile, when us is in the bedroom at night, you touch, you got your arms around each other, you sleep close, you actually sleep well. Your kids know when us is in the house because they feel its presence as well. Everybody knows when us is around because you can what? Feel its presence. But if you want us to be around, you have to become one word. It's humility. Humility is the way that you keep us around. Humility is the path for us. But hear me, I don't humble myself to Luella. I humble myself to... Here's why. When I humble myself to us, I'm giving to me. Because it takes two to make an us, one to kill it. So whenever I give to us, I'm actually giving to myself. Am I not? Because I am a component of us. So if I deny this need for the sake of us, I made the decision out of strength. I'm okay with it. Why? It's not because I have to. It's because I want to for the sake of... I love it when us is in the house. I hate it when it's not. You also know when us is not in the house. When us is not in the house, you feel the tension. You feel the angst. You feel the coldness. You can feel the... You got it? The bitterness, the resentment. You can feel the unforgiveness. And so can your children. They might not tell you verbally, but everybody knows when us is not in the house. You could feel its absence. You also know when us is not in the bedroom at night. Looks like this. Get your feet off me. I didn't know this much, this fat body can sleep on that much mattress. We're supposed to be adults, and that's how we sleep? Or you sleep in another bedroom. You sleep on the couch. Believe me, tell you something. That is not us. That's all about you. And to the degree you're resentful, bitter, unforgiving, prideful, selfish, if you want to be about yourself, you can be. I'm not here to judge you. Believe me, I'm not. It's not my purpose here. I am here to tell you, if you want to be about you, you can. But when us dies, don't complain. Because what you have declared by your very actions is I don't value us, I value me. And if you want to value you, feel free. But when us dies, don't complain. And when the other part of us leaves, it's because you earned it. Because you have let them know over time, I don't value us, I value me. And the brain will only take so much pain before it tells you to get out. Come to the marriage conference, I'll go into that real deep. Do not hear that I'm advocating divorce. I hate divorce, but I'm telling you, it's a real. It's a reality, and it's happening. And I get it. I get it. Because it takes one of you to kill it, two to make it. So if you want us to stick around, you got to practice what? Humility. Humility is the path to keep it there. God gives grace to the humble, but he resists the who? The proud. Your pride will kill your usness off. So you could decide today, moving forward, I can't change the past, but you could decide today, moving forward, you know what? I think I'll start to choose to live for. And when you do, you make different decisions for your life. Why? You're not doing it for her, or you're not doing it for him. You're doing it for us. Now, here's the thing about your usness. Your usness has its own way of functioning. Your usness in your marriage functions differently than your partner and you would. Example, this is one I always like to use. I, Rick Marks, do not like malls. Do not go to malls. You will not see me in a mall, ever. If you do see me in a mall, it's because I had to go to the mall. I will find out where in the mall that store is. I will park near wherever that store is. I go into the mall, I get what I want, and then I get out of the mall. Are you with me? I don't like malls. Simon, the company Simon, in these big cities, they're building these huge outdoor malls with no roofs, right? They look like little villages. I don't even go there. It's just a mall without a roof. That's all that is. It's deception, but I got to figure it out. Louisville, you want to go to Town Center? The mall. Now, even though I don't like the mall, us likes the mall. Us will go to the mall and stay for hours. You see, I don't like the mall, but us likes the mall. You see, us values the mall. Us enjoys the mall. Because when us is at the mall, that's not me. That's us. Because when us goes to the mall, man, we're walking, talking, holding hands, and dreaming. You got it? Us likes the mall. I hate the mall. Luella loves the beach. The beach has only one purpose in life. I'm here to tell you. And here it is. It's to dump the Marines off as they invade a country. That's all it's for. That's all it's for. It's the only purpose of a beach. It's to invade something from the sea. That's all it's for. Luella loves the beach. I hate the beach. I was a speaker on a cruise a couple years ago, and they paid for Luella to go with me, which was cool. It was a four-day cruise, and I spoke every morning for about an hour to this group. And on one of those days, they stopped at their island. You get on a boat and go to their island for the day, and Luella likes the... So she says, hey, how about after this we go to the... In that moment, I make a decision for me. No. Or a decision for us. Sure. And us decided, yeah, let's do that. And so I went to the beach. Had a great time. Until about 4 hours. She's laying there, you know, towel over her face. I'm sitting there, and I felt it. I felt it. And I looked at her and go, are you awake? Yes. Us is done at the beach, Rick's back. She sat up, she said, what? She goes, I said, Rick's back, I can't do this anymore. I'm going back to the boat to watch that Sandra Bullock movie with Clooney. She goes, you want me to go? You can do what you want, but I can't do this no more. Us is done. And I left. You see, I know what us can do, what us can't do. Luella would literally die, literally, she would die a physical death and never visit a battlefield. I don't know why anybody would not want to visit a battlefield. It's beyond my reason, right? But guess who likes battlefields? Yeah. And us goes, not often as I would like. It's not a complaint, it's just an observation. You know. So I'm 54, but 14 years ago when I turned 40, I got a gift. This is a phenomenal gift for someone like me. It was 3 nights and 4 days in a bed and breakfast in downtown Gettysburg during Civil War Heritage Week, which is the week of July 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, when the battle happened, which is also when the tens of thousands of reenactors show up, right? And all the Rebs are out there, and all the Yankees are out there, living historians for a whole week. And they also, this gift also included tickets to sit in the bleachers in the front. I didn't have to stand back there with those people. I got to sit out in the front for 8 hours a day in that hot sun and watch reenactments in front of me. Cavalry charges, mortar charges, artillery fights. Oh, it's great. And the gift was even better than that because they were tickets for... Woo-hoo! And us decided my brother Don went. Because us knew she had no business being there. She had a great time. I had a great time. Me and Don had a great time, and so did us. 2007, I was offered a job, the largest healthy marriage coalition in the country, California Healthy Marriage Initiative. It's a good job for me personally and a good job for me professionally. I did not take it, because though it was good for me, it was not good for us. 2011, April, I got a phone call, Governor Brownback's office, state of Kansas. Got my name from different sources, wanted to know if I would come and start the Healthy Marriage and Fatherhood Initiative for the state of Kansas. Us prayed about it, and us agreed that if they offered the job, I was to take it. They did offer, and I did go by myself for 1 year. People would ask me when I got out there, hey, is your wife with you? I'd say, no. They'd say, must be rough on your marriage. I'd say, not rough on my marriage. And they would say something, well, it would be if my wife wasn't here. I said, not if us agreed to it. See, it wasn't rough on the marriage because I never would have made the decision if us had not been behind it. Because I try not to make decisions that undermine. They asked the wrong question. They should have asked me, was I lonely? Yes. Every Wednesday night, we had a Skype date. We watched Criminal Minds together. I know it sounds weird, but we did. All right? I longed for Wednesday night Criminal Mind dates. Because we would watch it together, our own TVs in our own apartments, her house, another apartment I was staying at, and we would talk. Ah, loved that time. It was my boost for the next week. Got it? When you value us, your marriage will thrive. if you don't value us, at least don't complain when it dies. You're with me? What really bothers me is people who value themselves and then complain about the marriage. I'm like, this is not rocket science. You don't care about the marriage. Yes, I do. I hear you, but your actions speak differently. There's a trust issue here. If you say you value something, like I said earlier, love and value, right? Change the word love to value. You'll know what you know what people value. Watch where they put their time. Why would they push their watch where they put their energy? I'm not perfect, but Lula would tell you, I think, believe this, she would tell you, well, she would tell you that because she said it many times to other people. She said, Rick lives what he says to the best of his ability. I know that he values us, and I do, because I grew up in a home where there was no us. And I wasn't going to pass that on to my children one day. And by the way, why would I want to get married to not having us? That's stupid. And I have the power. Listen, I have the power and the ability to create in us. God put that in me. I can. I just have to move to humility and kill some of my pride off. You got it? And so when you value us, it'll make it. Now, there's four things that will protect your us. And there they are. Goodwill, respect, humility, and empathy. Those four things are a protective wall around the us. When you do things that are ill will, and I give you definitions and the skills. By the way, the work that we do, we teach you those skills to develop those four things, all right? Tony, I had this vision at the Robertson's house earlier this year. It was like May, I think it was their house. And the Lord goes, draw it. So I kind of drew it on a piece of paper, and then I went home and had someone do that for me. And it was like, oh, that's it. Goodwill, respect, humility, and empathy. If you want to protect us, do those things. Be those things. Not do them. Be them. Be an empathic person. Be a person of goodwill. Be a respectful person, and be a person who walks in humility. And when you be those things, us is easy. That make sense? And so that graphic is just a way to help you realize if you break down any one of those four, you are harming who? Us. And when you harm us, you harm your partner. Now, let me say this, because I know there's probably stepfamilies here, there's probably single parent here. Let me say it this way. Every relationship has an us to it. Me and this guy have an us or we don't, based on how we treat each other. Me and my children have an us or we don't. Every relationship has an us to it. Work teams have an us. That's why I have a corporate program. I try to take these skills into the workplace, and they go, oh, I could do this at home. Ah, brilliant idea. Take it back there now, all right? And so... Every relationship has an us to it, or it doesn't, based on how you treat each other. Us comes to its highest meaning and order and value in the marital bond. And here's why. Marriage is the only relationship humans enter into that image the Trinity. It's the only one. And when marriage breaks down, you distort the image of the Trinity to the world. And this is why young people today are walking away from the church. It's because they don't see the image of God in the church, and they don't see it at home. What they see is the image of something else. And just because you go to church and sing and preach, if the way you treat your spouse is an unloving, uncaring way on a regular basis, when your kids go, the heck with your faith, Dad, Mom, you don't even believe it yourself, don't complain, because they're right. Because if you say you love your spouse and you devalue them on a regular basis, it calls into question the trustworthiness of your words. That make sense? You trust those that you're connected to. Trust those that you're connected to. Connection is key because it's about the relation. That makes sense? Thoughts or comments about this? Anyone? Fight for your us. Now, let me wrap it up by giving this one other piece. I need to put the Lord back into the equation. Many years ago, I was studying the book of Hosea. The book of Hosea is about a marriage. It's about a guy, a prophet who's told to marry a prostitute. I mean, imagine the Lord telling you to go marry a prostitute. You'd think, are you crazy? And but Hosea was obedient. He did. He married a prostitute. Her name was what? Gomer. I always think Gomer Pyle. Don't think Gomer Pyle. All right? It's only Gomer I know. And so he's told to marry this prostitute named Gomer, and they get married. And if you know the story, she commits adultery throughout the marriage. But he always stays committed. He always stays faithful. And one day, I was studying, well, one period of time, I was studying Hosea many years ago, not about Israel and God, which is how it's always interpreted, God and Israel. I was studying it through the prism of marriage because it was about a marriage. And I got frustrated one night Lula was behind me sleeping. I was laying in bed studying it. And I got frustrated. And I kind of said in a whisper, in this tone, I said, why would you want a man to marry a prostitute? It's just kind of befuddling to me. Here's my disclaimer. My disclaimer is this. A personal revelation is not public doctrine. Okay? So I'm not saying this is doctrinally correct. But here's what Father said to me. Lovingly, though. So you'll know what it's like for me being married to you, bride. And then he just asked me some questions. How do I treat you when you prostitute yourself? How do I treat you when you're unloving? How do I treat you when you're mean? Do I always give the us in my marriage with you, sir? Yes, sir. Then you treat Lil the same way I treat you as my bride. And then I got a higher order for my marriage. Oh, I'm to love her as you love me when I act that way to you? Yes. You see, anybody can do an us. But for those of you who bear the name of Christ, you have a higher reason to give to us. It's because your heavenly husband fights for the us in his marriage with you, even when you don't. And that's the realm I live from. I'm not saying you have to. I'm offering it to you as a path. I have learned, though, in walking that path, life is a lot more sweeter. I've grown up a lot. I'm not that emotional child anymore. I've moved to adulthood. You know, more often than not, it's a wonderful place to live in that peace of being an emotional adult. You're not rattled by things. You're just okay the way it is, you know. Do you have issues? Sure. Do you let them control your life and dictate your life? No. Does God bring people your way to, hey, you need to work on this? Yes. And then you go do it, because that's what mature adults do. Why? Because they value relationship. They value relationship. And I will submit to you, you trust the people you're deeply connected to, but you don't trust people you're not connected to. And whether you like it or not, everything you do increases trust or decreases trust. Whether you like that or not, it's irrelevant. It is true. It's a fact of life and a fact of how relationships work. May it be that we choose to do the things that build strong us's in our marriages and with our children and with others around us. I mean, think about it. Those of us in the body, you see churches splitting. Churches splitting? Boy, that's a church who hasn't learned about grace yet, right? That's a church that hasn't understood grace. That's a church that doesn't understand to value relationship yet. What it values is whatever it is. They value. May it be we fight for us in all areas of life. Thoughts or comments? Can I close in prayer? Father, thank you that you fight for us in all that you do. So much so you never leave to forsake us. You're steadfast in your love and patience. We might walk away from the us in our relationship with you, but you don't with us. You're always there. And so, Father, may it be that we take this simple truth of oneness, of usness, and live it out in our relationship. It requires humility and goodwill and respect and caring empathy. But when we position our hearts for those things to rule, it will be and not until. There's a relationship here that has lost that love and feeling, as the song says, the essence of usness. I pray for a healing of their individual hearts, and I pray for a renewed commitment to their us. I ask it in Jesus' name for your glory and for my brothers and sisters and family's benefit. Amen.